You're listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, where you get valuable information you just can't find anywhere else. To thrive in today's trying times, you need the Financial Survival Network, now more than ever. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and get your free newsletter and gift. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.
Welcome. You are listening to and watching the Financial Survival Network. I'm your host, Carrie Lutz. Well, John Rubino is with us, and we're going to cover the banking crisis, the emerging banking crisis. It's amazing how black swans just come out of left field. You never know where or when they're going to happen. But the more of them that are flying around, the more likely something is going to hit the fan. Well, John, it's got to be the all-time worst call of Jim Cramer. I mean, it was just last month he was saying, Silicon Valley Bank, man, that's my pick of the decade. And here we are a month later, and it has ceased to exist.
Last year, towards the end of the year, Jim Cramer also picked Signature Bank, which is the only other bank that went bankrupt this week so far. So he picked, in within space of 1 year, he picked the two worst banks that you could possibly buy and pretty much the two worst stocks you could possibly buy. And yet he still has a job.
So does the weatherman, and figure, incompetence should never be a bar to a higher career, right?
Yeah, apparently. But anyhow, the thing with the banks now is one of those things that was coming, but it sure didn't seem like it was going to come this week. But basically, if there's been this question, as the Fed was raising interest rates, how high could rates go before something breaks? And how inverted could the yield curve get before something breaks? And the yield curve thing's important for banks because that's their business. They borrow short, they take in deposits, and then they lend long, for bonds or mortgages or business loans or whatever, at higher rates. Because in a world of positive yield curve where long-term interest rates are higher than short-term rates, that's a profitable business model. But when rates invert, that makes banks unprofitable, slows the economy down, and brings on a recession normally. But this time, it wasn't happening, even though the yield curve had gotten incredibly inverted, more inverted than it had been in history. But now we're finding out that that we're at the point of inversion where it does start to hurt the banks. Now, the Silicon Valley Bank was a special problem because it was basically taking gigantic deposits from Silicon Valley companies who were using it as where they parked their payroll money and stuff, without any regard for the FDIC limits on insurance for deposits. So this would have been a great bank to allow to fail, to make the point for everybody else that, hey, these seed insurance limits are meaningful. But instead, of course, what the government did was it just bailed everybody out and said, oh, did we say only, accounts of 250 grand or less would be insured? Nah, never mind. 25 million, 2 billion, whatever. We'll make good. So basically, once again, they proved that an economy where losses are socialized and profits are privatized, like what we have now, that any kind of crazy risk is okay because the government's going to bail you out. So this is a version of the Greenspan put, which we just saw put into place here. And all the other banks, even though a lot of bank stocks are down now, nobody's anywhere near as worried as they would have been had Silicon Valley Bank been allowed to fail. We missed an opportunity.
Well, effectively, what they've said once they guaranteed the deposits of Signature, I used to know the people at that bank. That was a result of a merger of a couple of other New York banks I did business with. But once SVB and Signature, once they guaranteed the deposits there, what they've done de facto is guarantee all deposits throughout the system. All right.
They basically just did away with the insurance limit.
Exactly. Jamie Dimon. Not my favorite person on the planet by any stretch, but he's been warning, for months now, John, that things were going to get bad. And like you said, the inverted yield curve, the Fed jacking up rates, seemingly till something broke. They finally jacked them up enough, something broke. So much for normalizing you know, interest rates. Now, you know, the 2-year yield, treasury yield is at 4.5. And so is the Fed funds rate. Actually, the 2-year is slightly below 4.43. But for all effects, for all purposes, the inversion is gone. Now they're in parallel. So that tells you something there.
Yeah, that still doesn't save the banks that need a positive sloping yield curve to make any money. And you know what's interesting about the situation right this minute is that the big banks that are really diversified are seen as being okay because they're not as susceptible to yield curve issues. But the little banks who, you know, I've always been telling people, you know, get into a local bank because that's where you want to keep your money. They're way safer and because they don't have trading desks and investment banks or anything. But it turns out they're the ones at risk right now because that's all they've got. They've got deposits and they've got loans to their neighbors. So it's kind of like that movie, Wonderful Life, where the guy's bank goes bankrupt and he's like, well, yeah, I don't have the money because it's in your house and it's in your business. And that's the big risk for these small community and regional banks now. And I think the really, really negative outcome from all of this, if it happens, is that it'll chase capital from small banks into the big giant banks that already have so much of everything. Hey. And so we further increase the dichotomy between the big too big to fail banks and everybody else, you know. And I think the only solution for that in the long run is antitrust. You go to JP Morgan Chase and say, from now on, you're 5 different banks. You decide how to divide everything up, but you can't be this big because you're too dangerous. But we won't do that because those guys basically own the government. So nobody in the government is going to be willing to stand up to Goldman Sachs and JP Morgan Chase and Wells Fargo and those guys. So we're stuck with a system that is corrupt and where the risks are skewed in the wrong direction.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, the idea of like that your local bank would be more safe than too big to fail national bank isn't really accurate because you got to understand that all of the local banks and the credit unions, what do they do with their surplus capital? They have corresponding relationships with one of the major banks, be it JP Morgan, Citi, Wells Fargo. And what they do is they put their surplus capital on deposit with those banks. And they can't do any transactions with the Fed without going through those banks. So they're directly subservient to the too big to fail banks. Whereas the too big to fail banks, if one of their little correspondents goes up, you know, they're probably hedged. They knew about it anyway. They knew this was coming for sure. There's no question that the big banks knew these little regionals were going to be in trouble. And like you said, because they're kind of immunized to yield curve inversion, but these regional banks are not. So now the question is, where are we going to go from here? And perhaps U.S. is safe, but what about all the banking, all those smaller banks around the world who are really kind of being left to hang out to dry?
Well, yield curve inversion is not just a U.S. phenomenon. Short-term interest rates have been going up dramatically in a lot of different places, especially Europe, right? With the ECB raising rates. So this is a problem for everybody. And it's a normal problem. That's the thing. That's how the financial system normally works. So, you know, of all the stuff that's abnormal out there, this is one of those things that's unsurprising, because that's how banking works. And when you change the financial system in a way that's a problem for the banks, the banks have problems. That's how it's always worked. And that's apparently how it's going to work again. So, you know, you look at all the stuff that's going on right now, and it's hard to imagine that we don't have a pretty serious recession here pretty soon because, you know, the bank thing, it's happening at the same time that you've got layoffs going on in a lot of different places and housing really, you know, tanking and everything. So I think this adds to the pressure on the economy, even if it leads the Fed to stop tightening, because they've already tightened enough to bring on a recession. So unless they start easing, which could happen, you know, let the banks start failing and the Fed has no alternative but to start easing again. So maybe we get this whole capitulation thing sooner rather than later, but that won't avoid a recession. We're still going to have that this year, but it might now be in the context of the Fed easing before the recession really becomes obvious to everybody, which would be new and different.
Well, honestly, the recession's been here. It's only been disguised by inflation, pretty much, because we've had real negative growth for several quarters now, maybe a year. So when you take that into consideration, it's all been an illusion. We're in the recession. Employment is the lagging indicator, right, in every recession. It's always the last domino to fall. And I expect we'll be seeing that soon. Maybe we've already seen it, and the employment numbers are so cooked that that it's been disguised also.
Yeah. So, a few months from now, it might be that the Fed is done bailing out the banks, but then they have to do commercial real estate or something like that. You know, one of the really cyclical industries that'll blow up in a recession. So it's possible that we're back in a period of rolling bailouts, which means massive money supply growth again and forcibly lower interest rates. You know, that whole thing might come back. But I think with one big difference, it'll be in the context of inflation that's above the Fed's target, and recognition on the part of basically everybody that that's it for trying to control inflation. We've proven we can't do it because we tried, and the banks blew up, and then commercial real estate blew up, and then housing tanked, and then whatever else happens after that happens. So we're going to be watching the financial market with a very different eye going forward, because we're going to know that inflation is going to be whatever it is, because the Fed is incapable of controlling it without blowing up the financial system. So paradise for precious metals. You know, that's the kind of situation where you would want to be piling into gold and silver, I would think. Hey. And you'd also want to be looking at shorting. You know, if you had shorted the bank stocks 2 weeks ago, you'd be very happy right now. You know, even Charles Schwab, which I moved some money from a local bank here into a Charles Schwab account. I tried to do it on Friday, and the transfer just went through today. But I was thinking Schwab would be a lot safer, but it's even way down today. So nobody is completely immune to economic disruptions. So I think well thought out shorting is going to be one of the best things you can do this year. And we'll just have to see, you know, what specific industries. But as of the last few days, banks were a pretty good target.
And interestingly enough, if you look at the share price of the major home builders for the past year, it's a very bullish looking chart. It's down a little bit past couple of months, but overall, the home builders have been going up. And there's only one reason why home builders go up, and that means that interest rates are going lower. And, you know, you look at the banks, they've really taken a hit. Home builders are on the rise, so go figure, right?
Don't just survive, thrive. The Financial Survival Network.
Torque Resources is an exploration company establishing a portfolio of premier copper gold early stage projects in Chile. Torque's management and technical teams have a strong track record of raising capital, discovery, and monetization of exploration successes. The company's Margarita copper gold project is located within the prolific coastal Cordillera belt in Chile, which hosts some of the world's largest and most profitable copper mines. The Margarita project possesses excellent discovery potential for a major copper discovery due to the strength of the alteration system, large-scale magnetic targets, and the presence of copper oxide mineralization. Drilling is anticipated to begin in Q3 of this year. Torque trades in Canada under TORQ and on the OTC under TRBMF. To learn more, go to TorqueResources.com. That's TorqueResources.com.
This is the Financial Survival Network, the information you need to thrive now more than ever.
Well, a lot of people who were bullish because they expected a Fed capitulation sooner rather than later. And then over the last month or so, when some economic numbers came in that were surprisingly good, that implied that the Fed was going to have to be tighter for longer. And Jay Powell even came out and said that just last week. He said, we're going to have to keep rates higher longer than you expect, and there's going to be pain. But then, boom, you know, the economy started to blow up. And now we're back to, okay, is this it? Is the Fed capitulating this week? And so you just can't know. But the guys who were bullish based on an early Fed capitulation are looking kind of smart right now. You know, I didn't think it was going to happen this soon because I didn't see the banks blowing up in this way.
This is just a 180. This is a 180. It's not a pivot. Look, gold's up as we're talking. And in case you don't know, it's March 13th. Gold's up $41 the ounce, 2.2%. Silver up $1.20, up 6-point-something%. Don't make me do the math, please. But pretty close to 6% it's up. And that is a monster move for the metals. And whether it's a bump, whether they'll go down again, my guess is this thing will settle down. I don't think we're getting the ultimate economic crash right now. I think they, you know, got to remember one thing. We hadn't had any bank failures in 2 years, which is like close to a record. The last time we didn't have any bank failures in 2 years was 05 and 06, I believe, or pretty close to it. What happened then? What I was concerned about over the weekend is what they should have done here, in my opinion, rather than shut these banks, they should have gotten white knights to come in, because it's proven that it's generally cheaper over the long run to bring in a white knight to just take these banks than it is to just shut them and pay depositors and all that good stuff. But they didn't do that. Instead, they shuttered him, and then Janet Yellen was trying to act macho over the weekend, saying, we're not bailing anybody out, right? And from a purely theoretical standpoint, they didn't. It came out of the depositors' trust fund, the FDIC, but the government effectively bailed them out by covering all deposits here.
Yeah. And I would argue that, yeah, that saves money in the short run by bailing them out or having white knights come in and everything. But it sends the wrong lesson, or teaches the wrong lesson to the economy, which is that, go ahead and take risk and keep most of the proceeds for your brilliance if you succeed. But if you fail, it all goes away. And we need big bankruptcies in order to teach that lesson to everybody else in the market, so we know what doesn't work, so we know how to behave. But what this does, you know, what the Fed did here was, okay, it let the stockholders lose money in this one Silicon Valley bank and one New York bank. And then it bailed basically everybody else out. All the other stockholders who would have gone bankrupt, who would have lost everything if their banks failed, they're basically okay now. You know, they're expecting the banking sector to come back, and maybe they should be buying right now and adding to their holdings and everything. So it was kind of normal life for those guys. And it wasn't terrifying. And I think you need terror every once in a while in capitalism to make the system work. And by taking that out of the system, we've given ourselves something that's more like crony socialism or something. It can't be called capitalism anymore. And the price signals that the markets used to send to tell capital allocators what to do have been paralyzed. You know, they don't send that message anymore. So we're misallocating capital now because nobody knows what they should be doing, but they suspect that the biggest chances that they can take are the right ones now because they're going to get bailed out if they fail. So I think we're screwing up on a meta scale here. You know, not don't worry about the banking system, don't think about the stock market, but think about the stage on which those guys act. And we're screwing that up in a really fundamental way. Which we have been doing ever since the dawn of the Greenspan put in the late 1990s. So, I think what we're seeing now is a very bad thing on a lot of levels that will come back to bite us in the, sometime in the future.
Oh, yeah. Well, we've been heading down this road, John, for decades now. Long-term capital, all of those bailouts that took place that led to the Greenspan put, and to think that they would actually mend their evil ways now isn't going to happen. You know, capitalism without bankruptcy is like Christianity without the devil. You know, you just can't, it just doesn't function because bankruptcy is the cleansing mechanism, but nobody's willing to sit back and watch the global economic system implode, because it's better for us in the long run. You know, in the long run, they're going to be retired. They're going to be dead. And all they care about is the short run. And if everything can hold together for the next few months, they've done their job.
Well, from their point of view, that's exactly it. If you get through the next earnings cycle, the next election, whatever, you have done your job. And then the future will just work out however. Like Keynes said, in the long run, we're all dead. So manage the present as best you can. And that comes at a price for the people who actually end up living in the future, you know, in the long run. You know, we're living in the long run of Alan Greenspan and Ben Bernanke. And we got a little taste of what that's like now, and it's only going to get uglier from here. So I think that this isn't a cause for celebration in any way. You know, the only people celebrating right now are who deserve to celebrate are the shorts, who correctly saw that the banking industry was going to pay a heavy price for this inverted yield curve and shorted a lot of these banks. You know, nobody else really deserves any credit in today's world.
Yeah, well, it's going to be interesting to see what happens. So you're thinking the bottom is in, I said for quite a while, Nick Santiago said it, that the bottom was in for silver. I think it probably is in for gold too. Amazing what a couple of days can do for the fundamental outlook of the metals.
Well, you see what happens to gold and silver when people start thinking the Fed is capitulating. So let the Fed actually explicitly capitulate. In other words, promise lower interest rates in the future and start increasing the money supply at a near double-digit rate, which is what they're going to have to do at some point. So think about that. When people aren't just suspecting that the Fed is capitulating, but they know it because the Fed has told them, and then watch what happens to gold and silver. The amount of money that is out there, the investable capital of the world is, you know, $30-ish trillion. And gold and silver together are minuscule compared to that number. So let a little bit of that start flowing into gold and silver, and you'll just see them take off. And I think that's an inevitability. Whether it's imminent or not is the question. And, you know, it could well be. It could be that the next sector to blow up convinces the Fed and everybody else that the whole tightening thing was ill-fated experiment that's going to have to be ended, and we're going to go back to what we know works, which is really low interest rates, easy money. And then, you know, you got to be buying gold at that point. Except here's the problem. You won't be able to get any. The gold will be all gone. The silver will be long gone by the time. So Yeah. So buy it now. Or don't expect to buy it, because even though premiums are pretty high right now, gold and silver are at least available. You know, at some point they become unobtainium, and then you just can't get it anymore. And then so you've lost that hedge that you were counting on, you know, that you were eventually going to move into when you were sure that the next phase of the inflationary blah, 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 you know, you were going to do that. You were going to make that move, but now, and you can't because nobody has it to sell anymore. That day is coming. You know, premiums are going to go up to 10 or 15 bucks an ounce on silver, and then the silver will just evaporate. You know, it just won't be there anymore. So I think our window is shrinking, our window in which to get set up so that we're ready. And we got kind of a taste of what that would be like. You know, had a few more banks blown up at the same time that the two that blew up did on Friday. You know, let the government be a little slower to bail them out, and then that's it. Then we're in that phase of the path to the edge of the cliff, where there's no real way to reverse everything. So I think those days are coming, and we got a little taste of what the early part of those days are like Friday and today.
Hey, and you know, one thing I'd like to point out is we've had a number of busts recently in March. Right. Usually the collapses come in the fall, September and October. But now, predictably, there's becoming a March crash. So that's something you need to be aware of in your investment decisions.
Well, yeah, crashes can happen anytime because companies don't really operate on a fiscal year where October is some incredibly important month for them. They have trouble anytime. You know, historically, you're right. We've had a lot of big crashes in September and October, but there's no reason why they can't happen at other times. It just depends on who's getting into trouble when and what the government decides to do about it. Thanks. So the way bear markets normally work is you get what we've already got, a 20% or so drop, and then you get a kind of a relief rally when people start thinking it's over, let's buy the dip. And then you get the real capitulation. You get the 35 or 40 or 50% more decline. And that's the way it's gone historically. So we're still at that point where if this is normal, then we should expect another big drop in the stock market. And there's no reason why it can't happen in spring or summer, and that we have to wait to fall for it. Although if we go all the way to fall with financial conditions the way they are right now, then a crash becomes really likely, just because monetary policy for most entities will have tightened so much as all the old cheap debt rolls over at higher rates that things will be a lot worse than they are now in a fundamental sense. So I mean, we could definitely get that crash then.
Oh, for sure. For sure. No doubt. It's uncharted territory. We got other things going in the world. We got Saudi Arabia and Iran apparently making peace. I'll believe it when I see it. I don't think peace is in their DNA, but they seem to be saying all the right things. So let's see what happens there.
Well, Gary, it's not necessarily peace. It's the enemy of my enemy is my friend. And if they're seeing us, the U.S., as the new enemy, whether it's financial or military or political and whatever framework they're using to judge, and they start to think that maybe the BRICS currency union is something they want to be a part of, but they can't be a part of it if they're technically at war, you know, if they're bitter enemies, maybe it's time to stop being bitter enemies for a little while and get this monetary thing done. And that could easily be because, you know, what we're seeing is other countries besides the BRICS countries themselves asked to join that union.
Wow.
And there's a critical mass point at which the power and the wealth of the countries that are joining the BRICS union become consequential, you know?
And
add Iran and Saudi Arabia to, what is it, Brazil, Russia, India, and China. And you've got a powerhouse coalition there. So it could be that they're looking at being part of something more powerful, and they're willing to step back from their own individual entity and join this new club. And if so, it's a big deal. You know, it's not an existential threat to the dollar, but a marginal threat to the dollar's usage as a reserve currency. In other words, not that many dollars are going to be needed if the BRICS become a legit thing. And those dollars have to go somewhere because there's 10 trillion of them or whatever floating around out there in the world. So they'll come back here, beat up U.S. assets, and give us more inflation than we can handle, which makes the dollar even less attractive, which makes the BRICS currency union even more interesting. You know, it's that kind of a feedback loop that is, you know, completely feasible with the way things are going.
Could be. Could be. Well, that is it for now. Make sure you go find John's work at his new Substack site, rubido.substack.com. And of course, send us any emails, your thoughts, put them down below on the YouTube channel. We will get back to as many of you as we can next week. It's a really interesting time we're going through right now. And hey, while you're at it, financialsurvivalnetwork.com, go there, sign up for your free newsletter. John, we will talk to you in a couple weeks and see what the situation looks like then.
Thanks, Gary. Talk to you then.
Thanks for listening to Gary Lutz's Financial Survival Network, your solution to today's trying times. For the latest, go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.